This is Jay Sekulow. A group of Palestinian lawyers threatening to file federal lawsuits because of the peace plan.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. We're going to start getting into some topics that, of course, the ACLJ is heavily involved in. There's a threat of a lawsuit. Now, this is an irony of irony. The president, while all this was going on in Washington with the impeachment trial, there was also some other news, believe it or not, and that was involving the peace plan. And this was the Israeli-Palestinian peace plan. And it got some Arab world support, which was important. But there's already now a threat, because of the peace plan, there is a threat by a group of Palestinian lawyers that have gotten together that say they will file lawsuits against any person that supports the plan or engages in business in the territories.
Yes, I mean, so we're seeing now, again, this is it between U.S. lawsuits, European lawsuits, anyone, any company, any politicians, individual businessmen. So not just their businesses, but individual businessmen. They are now making these threats to file lawsuits. And Dad, what we have seen in the past is that they will make good on at least filing the lawsuit and tying people up in court.
Oh, well, they have. I mean, we've got a case we're handling right now in the district court. We won it at the district court, and then the Court of Appeals reversed it. And Andy, that was a case that alleged that any groups involved in any business activities, including Shelley Adelson, among others, with in the what's called the settlement areas, would be a violation of international law. And there was a major lawsuit filed. And we represent Gush Etzion, a town, a city.
That was filed, believe it or not, Jay, in 2016.
I know.
That was
filed. And we won at the district court.
We represent Gush Etzion Foundation, which is a charity dedicated to defending the history and people of Gush Etzion, which is dozens of Israeli cities, towns, and villages near Jerusalem and Bethlehem. The wrongdoing that was alleged by the charities and nonprofits was they supported and continued to support the Jewish state of Israel.
Right.
That's their wrongdoing. We lost in the district. We won in the district court, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit reversed on jurisdictional grounds, which means you do have jurisdiction, sent it back to the district court. We are deciding right now whether we're going to litigate the motion to dismiss on other bases in the district court or just exactly what we're going to do.
Or take it on appeal.
Or take it on appeal
to the Supreme Court.
To the Supreme Court, which would be the next step.
Yeah, so Harry, you look at the, you looked at the peace plan. We're going to get into more on this in the next segment. You've looked at the peace plan. What's your assessment?
Well, my assessment is that this peace plan is a realistic approach to, A, improving the lives of the Palestinian people, and B, bringing peace to the Middle East. But equally clear, I think if you look at these the litigation filed by the Palestinians, that the Palestinian Authority opposes any plan that actually improves the lives of the Palestinian people. So they are committed to one goal and one goal only, apparently, and that is an attempt to destroy the legitimacy of the state of Israel, even if it hurts the Palestinian people.
So let me say this. We are prepared at the ACLJ, as we have been, to litigate these cases. So if this group of Palestinian lawyers bring cases, the ACLJ will meet that challenge. As I said, we're representing the Gush Etzion Foundation. Andy just talked about that case. That's now going back to the district court for more litigation. So we will handle that. When we come back from the break, we'll be joined by Skip Ash. I want to talk to him about this case. I want to talk to him about the peace plan. We're also at the ICC again, International Criminal Court. Boy, it seems like yesterday we were there. December, was it 6th, 4th, 5th, and 6th when it was involving the United States. Now there's one involving Israel. And your American Center for Law and Justice and our European Center for Law and Justice are front and center on those cases. In fact, your support of the ACLJ and ECLJ makes it all possible.
Folks, go to ACLJ.org to learn about all of our work and support the work of the ACLJ. That's ACLJ.org. You can donate today.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So we've got the Palestinian Authority threatening a lawsuit against anyone who accepts President Trump's peace plan. Harry just laid out for you that it is, and we'll get more into it, it's a comprehensive plan and one that he thinks has a lot of potential. What do you think is the biggest aspect of it, Harry? Is it the economic side?
I think it's the economic side, but it also makes plans to, if you will, unify the lands controlled by the Palestinians and the lands controlled by the Israelis. And so essentially the Palestinian Authority would control a contiguous area, whereas I believe currently there's some areas that have difficulty communicating and moving from one area to another that are part of the Palestinian Authority. So I think it's very, very helpful. It's sensible. But I also think because it's sensible, because it's helpful, because it improves the lives of the Palestinian people, the Palestinian Authority is very committed to opposing it.
Well, that was one of the questions that came in via Facebook here is which I thought was pretty interesting, I think it just kind of sums it all up. And that this is from Lucy, does the Palestinian Authority really want peace? I'm going to go to Skip Ash, our senior counsel in charge of our international law group, does a lot of work in Israel. Does the Palestinian Authority really want peace, Skip?
I think they want peace, but only on their own terms. They want 100% of their demands, and if they don't get 100% of their demands, then they're going to fight every little thing. Remember, they were given the opportunity on at least two other occasions where they were going to get 97% of what they asked for, and they rejected that. Abba Ibn was right. They never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. So they want peace, but only on their terms, and ideally their terms is with Israel sitting in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, Andy, and I want Jordan to comment on this too. In looking at this latest move by the Palestinian Authority, which is basically they completely reject the plan, don't even want to discuss it, yet there are significant concessions in there that both sides would have to make. It does seem like what Skip's saying is right. They just don't want to go there.
Well, they don't.
Because it impacts their leadership base.
I think the answer really to the question that the Facebook a person said, does the Palestinian Authority really want peace, is the answer is no. Not on their terms, not on any terms. They want to continuously stir up action against the State of Israel because their ultimate determination, Jay, And the ultimate goal is to eradicate and to eliminate the existence of the state of Israel, period. And they give you these ideas that, yes, we'll take this or yes, we'll take that, but we want it on our terms. I think the real goal here is to eradicate and to eliminate the state of Israel. And peace means the lack of getting any more money, which is what their leaders really are wanting, yeah, here, money and power. Once you have peace, you don't have that. They want that. They're not going to give up on any terms whatsoever.
Jordan, what do you think?
I think that when it comes to this issue, as Skip has said, as Andy has said, if it's not everything they want, and that includes Jerusalem, basically, they're in this position now of, we're going to reject everything. And by the way, we're going to make these threats of suing everyone who would even support a peace plan. It's absurd, but it just tells you this is supposed to be the moderate faction within the Palestinians. These are supposed to be the people you can deal with.
Yep.
When the Palestinian movement and with the Palestinian governments and leadership, and they reject everything without even going to the negotiating table. And I think that's what's so disappointing about the leadership for the Palestinian people. And it will take the people waking up one day, I think, to this and changing their leadership, because this is an old leadership set in their ways. They want Jerusalem.
They must have.
This is his guys. Right. They want Jerusalem. If they don't get Jerusalem, nothing's good enough. And they're not going to get Jerusalem.
So, Harry, I look at it. I want Skip to comment on this, too, but I'll go to Harry first. In looking at it, it seems to me that the Palestinian people themselves probably want peace. It is the leadership that does not.
I think your analysis is spot on. Essentially, the leadership, this is my view, wants to continue the opportunity to take advantage of all of the aid plans, and then they take advantage of those aid plans, and then they ship a disproportionate amount of the money to Europe. So the plan that President Trump proposed would enable a future Palestinian state to be contiguous and united. But at the same time, the plan would not give the Palestinians the right to threaten Israel's security interest. It's also important to note that although the Palestinian leaders have already rejected this proposal and they're threatening to sue, representatives of the Arab states of Oman, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates attended this week's news conference with President Trump, where he announced his vision for peace. So there's some optimism about this peace plan among the Arab people broadly, but there's little optimism about the plan among the Palestinian leadership.
So, Skip, I want you to comment on that, because I want to say for the next segment our latest activity at the ICC.
Yeah, I think the president's plan recognizes reality between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And by doing so, they're trying to make the life of the Palestinians as nice as it can be by providing monies, by providing contiguous territories, by providing self-rule, at the same time with not endangering the existence of the state of Israel. I think the broader Middle East is finally coming to the realization that the promises that were made by the Palestinians to the Palestinians in the so-called diaspora were totally unrealistic. They're not going to get their houses back in the Tel Aviv area. They're not going to get Haifa back. They're not going to get these places back. The president recognizes that. He said, okay, what we want to do is to make your lives livable, enjoyable, so that you have a good life for yourselves and your children. They can live out their lives in peace and prosperity. And what we want to do is to solve these problems. And the more that the Palestinian authorities fight this or withhold it, the worse the situation gets, because the Israelis continue to develop. More people are moving there, and they're continuing to develop settlements and so forth. And those settlements, I want to emphasize that those settlements are lawful despite what the international community says, and therefore the Palestinians are painting themselves into a corner, and they're never going to be able to get out of it if they don't make some compromises.
All right, well, coming up in the next segment, we're going to get into the latest move at the International Criminal Court in The Hague with the prosecutor, Office of the Prosecutor. We were there in December defending the United States' interests. Now we're going to be, looks like, back again defending Israel's interests. Before we do that, we're going to go to a phone call. Now, this is an interesting phone call, because this is from a friend of mine who I've not spoken to in probably 40 years. at least. Came to Atlanta once. We were friends in Jericho, Long Island. I've been trying to look him up for years. Steve, is it really you?
Jay, is this really you?
It is. This is pretty great.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Steve Mills has been my professional performing name as a band leader, guitar teacher, musician. Let me tell you, my second wife, who I've been married to for 23 years, yep. Doris, she's 10 years younger, she started watching you about 2.5 years ago and marveled at you. And then I started watching and I said, Doris, you're not going to believe this. I was his guitar player playing Sugar Sugar by the Archies.
Right.
And he was my drummer. And we had a wonderful, you know, his brother is Gary, his sister is Cindy.
No, Jeannie. The cousin was Cindy. It's Cindy. Jeannie was my sister. Yeah, is my sister.
Yeah. Yep. Right. And your parents, yep. I remember.
Yeah.
But I've been following you and who you.
Where are you living now, Steve?
I've been for 40 years exactly in South Florida, in Weston.
I moved
to Florida in 1980. And, it was a great move for me and came successful in the band business, you know, bandly. I saw your video, by the way, on my wife's phone.
Yeah, still playing.
I know. I mean, you never stop. Your band was marvelous.
Yeah, but you were, I mean, Steve, I got to say this about Steve. I mean, we were friends since we were probably 13 years old. The band initially was me and Steve. I mean, he played guitar, I played drums. And at like 13, 14 years old, he could play guitar. I've still never seen. I mean, it was incredible. I am so glad that you reconnect. I've been trying to, you know, now that I know your stage name, but I got your phone number too, so we'll reconnect after the broadcast. But I appreciate, Steve, you calling in. It means a lot.
Call me because I'm a huge fan of yours. And I said to Doris, I'll make you a $100 bet. I'll make you a $1,000 bet. This guy was a great, true friend of mine, and we love it. So anyway, you have my number.
That's
great. And you now live in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, Washington and Nashville and, you know, kind of back and forth. But the last months have been up in Nashville. But
oh, my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
Up in Washington. Yeah, so we just got back. Hey, Steve, thanks for calling in.
Hey, please call me. I have a lot to tell you. Thank
I'm going
to
do it. I'll call you after the broadcast or call you this afternoon. It's great to hear from you. Well, that's a great way to go into a break. I've been looking to try to find him literally for years, and I had his real name, not his professional name. Yeah. There you go.
Stage name.
Yeah, stage name. He's a talented
guy.
Still
in the business.
Yeah,
still in the business.
It's great. Not shocking either, by the way. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, I'll hear from other band members. There you go. It'll be reunion week. I did hear from a lot of people while we were up representing the president. All right, we'll take your calls, 800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. By the way, we are going to get into the New Hampshire primary and politics in the second half hour of the broadcast. So, again, going through the polls there, Iowa was such a disaster. It was a mess for a lot of for the Democrats last week. It was just a disaster, let's put it that way. But they've got their primary tomorrow night. Should get results, should get numbers. So we will cover that for you in the second half hour if you've got questions about that. The weird, I'd say the weird, like, point of this primary is that you still have these Bloomberg-type figures who are not really competing, and you've got the traditional campaigns really falling apart. Maybe you have Mayor Pete on the rise, Bernie Sanders on the rise, but Joe Biden, let me say, I worked for Jeb Bush's campaign, so I don't mean this in a horribly mean way, but it feels very similar to that campaign, which I worked on, which is just You started off at the top, and then once things actually started, you never got off the ground. You never got above fourth and fifth place. And it looks like Joe Biden's setting people up. He told people, like, I'm going to take a hit here. He took a gut punch, he said, in Iowa. He's going to take a hit in New Hampshire.
Can he if he does get – he got hit in Iowa.
Yeah.
Although Iowa, what a mess that is.
Yeah.
So that's, like, over. But he's going to come in, like, fourth or fifth in New Hampshire.
Yes, looks like fifth.
Then it's Nevada.
Yeah, he should do better there.
We're going to talk about this when we come back from the break.
Yeah.
But at the back half hour, we'll get into this. But it looked pretty pretty weak for him. All right, let me go to we're focusing today on the on some ACLJ cases that we've got. There's this threat of Skip, how do you view this threat of litigation? I mean, we saw it in for real as it relates to the Al-Tamimi case, which we're handling. So it's not like they don't do this. They, you know, you do business with the territories, and they file suits, so you got to take it seriously because they file lawsuits. They say they're prepared to file hundreds of them. What's your thought on this?
Well, I think, you know, lawfare is alive and well, and they've gained a lot from engaging in lawfare. So they're using the courts as their battlefield against their enemies. So I think they're probably going to do it. I just don't think they're going to have a lot of success, at least in the United States. They may have greater success in Europe because Europe is already has a basic anti-Israel forum. So anything that they can raise in Europe will be much better received. In the United States, I think much less so. But I think we have to prepare for it and expect numerous lawsuits.
Andy, what do you think? I mean, we're dealing with the Al-Tamimi case. Like you said, we've been dealing with it for 3 years.
Right. Well, I think we have to realize that the ICC is power grabbing and wanting to assert itself right now. The prosecutor, I should say, not the court. The prosecutor wants the Chamber of Judges to determine what land belongs to Palestine in direct contravention of a number of key principles of international law, as well as agreements entered into freely by the Palestinians with Israel. And as Skip Ash has said, it would be like some foreign entity coming into the United States and deciding that Arizona, California, and New Mexico really belong to Mexico.
So Skip, this new lawsuit or this new filing that the Office of the Prosecutor put forward, what is she exactly? She's a request for an investigation?
Actually, it's a request for the pretrial chamber to determine the territorial area that the so-called state of Palestine occupies, so she can know where the Israelis may have committed crimes on a territory of a state party to the Rome Statute. So they're being asked.
So they're basically asking them to determine the boundaries?
Absolutely. Mm. What she wants from them is their confirmation of statehood to include the footprint of that state. So this is something that we have to fight because, first of all, Palestine doesn't qualify as a state. And secondarily, this court has no authority to be able to make such determinations.
Now, Skip, we've already filed in this, correct? Or are we starting our filing process?
We have filed a request for leave to file submission. So we've filed a request to be able to file a response. That determination is supposed to be made Friday of this week. We'll know whether we're allowed to do it or not. And then if we are allowed to do it, we have to file by the 16th of March.
Skip, something we were talking about in our pre-radio call was that we're starting to see some of the same actors from way back when we were at the ICC the first time on this Israel situation. They're already starting to file their leaves to get involved on the other side of this issue.
We're already seeing that?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Professor Quigley from, he's now retired, but a professor emeritus from Ohio State University was one of the people you debated, Jay, when we went over, when we met with the first time with the first prosecutor. He's come back again, and he says he has a strong case that Palestine is a state. We've answered that a couple of times. We're going to have to answer it again before this chamber of judges if we're given permission to do so.
Palestine is not a state. It has never been a state. It was a Roman province, if we want to go back to the to ancient history. But to make the argument that there is a state of Palestine as such is not true. And I think we need to be, as we have been very active with the ICC, Jay, we were very successful. We went there in December and made our arguments against jurisdiction over U.S. soldiers and the attempt by the prosecutor to prosecute them for war crimes. And I think this is something that we need to continue to do in this new phase.
Let me ask you this, Skip, on this one. No clearance yet on whether there'll be any kind of oral argument, right?
That's correct. I think when they publish the order that's going to come down probably Friday or early next week, they're going to lay out who may participate and whether there's going to be oral arguments.
What do you think? What's your gut?
My gut would probably be no, but because this is a pretrial chamber, this is not as important. But the issue is so important, I think there are going to be a lot of people who would like to have oral arguments. And if so, we're going to pursue it. If that's an option, we want to do that also.
Back to the Hague we might go. I mean, that's how it appears. So you look at the situation, Harry, in kind of from a policy perspective. You got a peace plan on the table, yet you got the threats from the Palestinian lawyers to file lawsuits against anybody that does business with the settlements. And then you have at the ICC the prosecutor saying, "Hey, we want to know we want the court to determine the statehood and boundaries, not the international communities, not the NGOs, not the UN. We want the court to decide what the boundaries are and whether there's a state."
I think your analysis is very, very sound. So essentially, we have a situation where global elites, something that Professor Patrick Deneen calls liberocrats, they respond to grievances or alleged grievances. And the Palestinian people have done a fabulous public relations job in cultivating what might be called a grievance culture. So global elites are quite prepared to ignore governing law, including international law, and instead substitute their own judgment for the judgment of the people's representatives. Keep in mind that the ICC, in theory, is grounded in the notion of the consent of sovereign states, and it's up to the political authorities to decide whether or not to agree to the Rome Statute governing the ICC. Yep. Israel and the United States have declined to join.
Yeah.
So this prosecutor at the ICC is saying, "Listen, let's substitute my judgment for the judgment of governing authorities, and this is demonic."
All right, so coming up, we're getting into some politics. New Hampshire, some pretty interesting new polling out showing a new person in third place. Someone who's been around politics for a long time, dropping down to fifth place, though still first place in the national polls, which is interesting. We'll take your phone calls on politics coming up, 1-800-684-3110. Is there anyone in this Democrat field right now that you believe is a threat to President Trump's reelection? Because Jonathan Carl from ABC News, after the Democrat debate on Friday night, said no. He said absolutely not. There's not anyone who is a threat. And that many New Hampshire Democrats are already talking about Trump being reelected as a given. Now, you never take any election as a given. We'll be right back.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. In the first half hour, we talked about some developments in Israel. You saw a threat of lawsuits from Palestinian lawyers. We have cases currently involving Palestinian lawyers that have sued our client, among others, Gush Etzion Foundation, which is a foundation for a settlement, large city, actually, in Israel, has been sued by these same Palestinian legal groups. And now we've got a move at the International Criminal Court in The Hague to have the court decide the boundaries of the state of Israel, which would include also the boundaries of, this, of Palestine, and to legally determine, Andy, if Palestine is a state, which would have to go through the UN, but she's trying to get the court to do it.
This prosecutor has got serious problems, let me tell you. She is so obviously anti-Israel and has been that way for a long time and needs to be severely reined in. And in one way, the court did rein her in, and she appealed that to the appellate chamber, which we addressed in early December. But now to have an international criminal court, think about this, Jay, making a determination of what the boundaries of a sovereign state are or should be is a ridiculous prospect.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's exactly what she's trying to get this court to do, to make that determination. That will never be.
Yeah. So, Harry, very quickly, then we're going to go to politics. How do you see it playing out? I mean, I think that they obviously we'll be able to respond either in writing or orally to engage this, but they're not going to stop.
Well, I think the prosecutor is A, very, very persistent.
Yeah, no
B,
question.
B, the ICC's appellate chamber is much more cautious.
Yep.
But I also think that the ideas which propel the ICC prosecutor are becoming more and more widely accepted, including within American law schools.
Yep.
And pushed by American law professors who've been educated at elite institutions,
yep,
who basically disdain the results of democracy, particularly a democracy controlled by the common people. And so essentially what we have here is a prosecutor who says, well, let's ignore international law, let's ignore sovereign boundaries, let me decide what are the true and legitimate boundaries for the Palestinian people and the state of Israel. This is unsustainable.
All right, so Jordan, politics.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that the next half hour. By the way, your reactions to where we are politically, what you think is going to happen, how you think these debates will go tomorrow, or actually the caucus tomorrow,
yeah,
the primary tomorrow. Who do you see as the likely candidate? What's your view on the president's capabilities against these various opponents? Take your calls at 800-684-3110. How do things look now? Ohio, Iowa is like everybody's forgetting about, right?
Yeah, I mean, the two people that came out of Iowa, well, the surprise was Mayor Pete, and then the no surprise was Bernie Sanders, and the bad news was that, as Joe Biden put it, it was a gut punch, and now he said he's going to take another hit in New Hampshire, and here's why. Latest two polls out of New Hampshire in just the last 2 days since the debate, Bernie Sanders still in first place, has at least a 3-4 point lead. So, I mean, a pretty good lead for Bernie Sanders there, but not again, not something that couldn't be overtaken by Mayor Pete, but it doesn't look like there's anybody else in the top two. It's Sanders, then Mayor Pete. Here's what's interesting. Third place is not Elizabeth Warren,
yeah,
which is a border state senator.
Right.
Okay. Third place now is Amy Klobuchar. And now fourth place is Elizabeth Warren. And guess who is in fifth place?
Joe Biden.
The former vice president of the United States,
so
Joe Biden.
How does that look for him then?
Well, here's how it hurts you. In New Hampshire, if you don't get 15% of the vote at either one of the two congressional districts that they have or statewide, you get zero delegates out of this. So not only are you coming out like basically with zero at the numbers he's at, you're having to, I mean, convince your donors that you have a shot because of minority voters in the South Carolina and Nevada before you hit Super Tuesday, and you got what, no money? Pretty tough for Joe Biden, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and Harry,
though he still leads the national polls,
we'll tease this, but he's got a challenger in South Carolina too, Joe Biden.
Absolutely, Tom Steyer, who's spending tens of millions of dollars trying to attract voters.
Yeah, so wow.
So all Biden has a challenge.
Yeah, we're going to get into this for the next half, next 20 minutes or so. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Don't forget to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110, talking a little bit of politics. The back half hour, first half hour, we talked about the situation in Israel. What's interesting is the actual primary in New Hampshire's tomorrow. We got an interesting call coming, and I want to take it from Lorraine in New Jersey. Lorraine, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. This is a good question for Jordan.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I was just calling because I have a comment. I think that Bloomberg would be the only candidate, if he's even on the ballot, to give Trump maybe a challenge. But now my question is, being that he hasn't been on the debate and he was in Iowa, can he still run?
Yeah, oh yeah, he could still get. You have to, all you have to do in most states is either get enough signatures or write a check, and you could get on the ballot. You don't have to be in the debate stage. That's how Democrats kind of control who is being featured. But he's about to start getting on the stage. Is that right, Will? He'll be on the next debate stage. So Mike Bloomberg is going to start having more of an impact. He's not really playing in these early states, but these states don't have enough delegates to get you a win. They usually are about momentum. The issue here is that the candidates who have been spending tens of millions of dollars, Elizabeth Warren, okay, a neighboring state senator, if she finishes third or fourth place in New Hampshire, she might need to drop out. The truth is, Elizabeth Warren may need to drop out, because if you can't you can't finish in the top three, and you're talking about a commuter state to Boston, okay, and you represent, you know, your Massachusetts senator, and these are commuter cities to the Massachusetts, and you can't do better than fourth place there. You gotta check, you know, your whole campaign fell apart in Nevada over harassment claims again, of racial harassment claims. So she's lost most of her Nevada staff. I have a feeling some of that had to do with salary, too. You look at this big picture, you see what's coming together. It's a kind of a joke, and that's what Jonathan Carl said, too. Listen, he's on ABC News. It's the ABC News talking about the Democrats after their Friday night disaster debate. So I watched some of it. It was truly a disaster. I live-tweeted some of it just to show people the crazy stuff they were putting out there to one-up each other on, like, abortion and this and that, and, you know, it was just shocking, I'd say. Here's Martha Raddatz asking Jonathan Carl about it, Bite 19.
Who do you think stood out in terms of going after Donald Trump? You deal with Donald Trump every single day.
First of all, obviously the candidate that he feared most early on was Joe Biden. That is not the case anymore. And I don't think there was anybody based on tonight's performance that has the Trump campaign quaking in their boots.
Okay.
She didn't like that response, obviously. But the truth is, even the mainstream media has to admit when they've got no good candidates. They got a communist. Literally, we now have video of Bernie Sanders shirtless in Russia singing communist songs, drinking back vodka bottles on his honeymoon. Okay, this is who is going to beat Donald Trump? Or Elizabeth Warren, who lied about her race to get her promotions, and now she's having a whole issue with her staff in Nevada, mostly Hispanic and Latino, who've all mass quit because of being treated inappropriately at the workplace. Mayor Pete, who is a 37-year-old untested mayor from the 308th largest city in America, who, by the way, people are very concerned about, like, who is this guy? I mean, we don't know anything about him. Where is he coming from? Why? He's got a few people backing him, like Bernie likes to say, a few billionaires.
Yeah.
So is he being controlled by like a few? I mean, I don't want to sound like Bernie Sanders, but it kind of is like he is being controlled by a few billionaires.
So.
And then Joe Biden, who's just going around insulting his supporters. And I know he was quoting John Wayne, so I'm not going to buy into this. But I would not call any woman in their 20s.
From my alma mater, from Mercer. She was up there and asked the question.
And even if it's a John Wayne quote, I wouldn't be calling any woman dog face in 2020. You know, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
So he, to me, has disqualified himself. I think the impeachment trial killed Joe Biden. Because it kept bringing up how corrupt Joe Biden was and how corrupt his son was. And the Democrats have let him be kind of
they wanted
die
him,
on that.
The rest of them wanted him out anyways. So, Harry, what is the decision that from a if you were a Democratic policy strategist, they're in two worlds. You've got the moderate world. It's hard to believe I'm even saying this.
They're not
the moderate world, which I know that.
It's progressives versus communists.
I think that's probably right. But okay. I think that's fair. Stop calling them moderates. It's the Biden Buttigieg wing and Klobuchar versus the socialist communist wing. Where do you see it?
Well, I think the Democrats
are they having an identity crisis?
I think that's true, and I think a significant number of the Democrat electorate are looking for another option. So on one hand, you have Joe Biden and his candidacy, which was widely trumpeted as a kind of middle-of-the-road Democrat. He is collapsing before our very eyes, but that was predicted because he has difficulty getting out two coherent sentences in a row. That's number one. Number two, you have Mayor Buttigieg, whose biggest accomplishments are first firing the first African-American police chief in South Bend, followed swiftly by his second accomplishment, which was firing the first African-American fire chief in South Bend. And
he's
going to
do very well in South Carolina.
Thirdly, Mayor Pete, he has experience inserting commemorative bricks in sidewalks. And so I just don't think that experience commends himself to the American people. So, and then you have Elizabeth Warren, who basically, as Jordan correctly points out, claimed that she was an American Indian for purposes of becoming the first woman of color at Harvard. So it is very difficult to foresee a rational way forward for the Democratic Party.
And then you got Mike Bloomberg. He's a billionaire, right? He does not like my soda right here. He wants to take my soda. I love the Saturday Night Live Fred Armistead every time he's popping up in the debate thing. He's got the huge soda and the little Mike Bloomberg. And I mean, I just think that it's just Mike Bloomberg was a Republican. Do you think he's going to excite the progressive liberals, a billionaire who's the head of Bloomberg Enterprises, which is about the stock market? So, So if he got the let's say he got the nomination, you think the Bernie Sanders people are going to come out for Mike Bloomberg? The progressives, the AOC world? No, they're not. So they can't win with him. They had to have somebody that can straddle kind of both these worlds, but they've killed. And I will say this. People say that our tone and President Trump's tone. Have you been seeing these reports about the Bernie Sanders people online? Oh, my. I mean, the Bernie bros talking about threatening people. I mean, threatening with violence online, with social media, to the point where Bernie Sanders has had to distance himself from their commentary. I mean, so you've got Bernie Sanders got Antifa, you know, Antifa with him, and they're making these threats to people online, like if you don't vote for Bernie Sanders, we'll burn your house down, kind of thing, and coming after people, bullying them, and this is the modern Democrat primary. You know what I think it is? TDS is Trump derangement syndrome, and when they all have it, and they do, okay, you have this disaster on their hands. And that's what they do.
And you take your home state of Georgia, which was remarkably close in the governor's race.
Scaringly close.
Yeah. And so is that, do you think that was an anomaly or do you think that's something?
No, I think, Jay, that was an anomaly because the candidate for governor, Brian Kemp, who was Secretary of State, was very weak, in my opinion. He probably made a good appointment to the U.S. Senate in Kelly Loeffler. The first female U.S. senator from Georgia. But that was an anomaly, Jay. I don't think that that's going to pan out in the national election. I think Trump is going to carry Georgia very handily because of the things that Jordan has just said. You've got a senile person. You've got a socialist. You've got the squaw. You've got the bricklayer and other things, which I won't go into there. You've got Klobuchar, who dumped on Georgia and made a statement that we suppressed votes down there. I'll never forgive her for that. And she, yes.
None of that's come back out about her yet. But if she does well in this, they're going to kill her with that, about how bad. She's got staff on the record saying how bad she was to them in her Senate staff. That's not going to do well.
No, this is an interesting, I mean, it's an interesting cast of characters. I will say that. And what's your prediction on tomorrow?
I think Bernie Sanders has to win. If he doesn't win, he's in serious trouble. If Mayor Pete somehow surges to the, you know, surges.
Where is it right now?
I think it's Mayor Pete is within 7 in the closest poll. So I think it's going to be Bernie, right? But independents can vote in New Hampshire.
Right.
Which means Bernie, 7 points can be erased quickly. He only slightly holds a lead among independents. And that's of today. So if they switch and say, you know what, Bernie's getting too much flack for being this communist, this bullying stuff, too nasty his language, and they just do kind of a protest vote, which those independents can do there, then you get, you know, Mayor Pete winning. Bernie's thrown off his game. Joe Biden is definitely thrown. I mean, Joe Biden would surprise us if he came in the top 3. Let's put it that way.
But you still think he hangs on till South Carolina?
Yeah, I guess, as long as he's got the money to do it.
And Nevada's first, right?
Nevada is first, and he should do better there. So there's no excuse if he doesn't.
We'll find out who's leading in Nevada when we come back from break. All right, we're taking a break. We come back, we'll take your calls. Last segment, 1-800-684-3110. We encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. Jordan's going to let you know how.
Yeah, that's at ACLJ.org. As you realize today, we're getting more into about what the ACLJ has been up to while we've been busy these past few weeks. We've got a lot more to talk about there as well. And, of course, New Hampshire tomorrow. ACLJ.org. You can donate today.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, and we're talking New Hampshire tomorrow. We talked about some other issues that ACLJ is involved in. You can find out at aclj.org. And I know we have a lot of listeners in New Hampshire. They're busy right now with the primary, and of course, President Trump will be up there for a rally. Republicans will have their primary tomorrow as well. After New Hampshire, by the way, the schedule goes, it's another caucus. Oh, Lord, I don't know what Nevada's using to track their caucus. Maybe it's extra shadowy or extra secretive or Fusion GPS Part 3, the Shadow Project, Die Another Day caucus. I don't know. But they've got a caucus February 22nd. Now, the last poll out of there was January 11th. It showed Biden barely leading Sanders and then Warren, then Steyer. I mean, I think that poll's – it's tough to poll caucuses, and that's a month – it's more than a month old. I would say this. Joe Biden is – maybe not in first place anymore, though he does do better when it's more diverse. So that's what we keep being told anyways, is that he's going to do better when it's more diverse. Now, after Nevada, February 22nd, you get South Carolina February 29th, and boom, 5 days later, you get the Super Tuesday, March 3rd, which is Alabama, the American Samoa, Arkansas, California, Colorado, the Democrats abroad, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. That's where people like Mayor Bloomberg are trying to make a big push as well. If we've got callers from New Hampshire, I'd love to hear from them. They get their calls in right now, 1-800-684-3110. I'm sure we'll hear from them tomorrow as well. But let me go to some these. There's neighboring, you know, close by, not neighboring. But to answer some of your questions as well, let's go to first Cheryl in Rhode Island on line one. Cheryl, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for everything you do for this country.
Thanks, Cheryl.
It's a two-part question. First part is, do you think it's possible for another candidate to get into the race right now? Somebody who's well-known, popular, large following?
Yeah, it's always possible that somebody can jump at the last minute and be the savior of the Democratic Party, but I don't think I've heard some names of John Kerry coming in at the last minute. Hillary Clinton, of course, is always in the wings ready to bring corruption anew to the Democratic Party and to the country, and could come in, but I doubt that. I think the people who've been out there working the population and running in the caucuses and in the primaries are going to be the ones. My prediction is that the Democratic Party will self-destruct and elect and nominate Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
ultimately,
I that's where I'd be right now. He's actually got the easiest path to New Hampshire tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah. He has to weather a couple of key states for him, not great states, but as long as he does well, I think, you know, it's interesting. Denise on Facebook wrote in, I'm not sure Obama could win the nomination in this field, and that's scary because he wouldn't be. Now, he would be the moderate in this race, Harry, now. Obama would be the moderate.
Yes, he might be seen as moderate to conservative, given what's happened to the Democratic Party.
Yeah, moderate to conservative.
Wow. But I also think we should keep in mind that the Democrats' problems are largely self-inflicted. In other words, when they started out, some of these individuals were considered moderates, but they've allowed themselves to be pulled to the left. They've allowed themselves to support Medicare for All, which would destroy private health insurance for up to 180 million Americans, including Medicare recipients. They've written bills. So, for instance, if you look at the Medicare for All bill itself, what does it do? It literally destroys Medicare. And so this seems like a recipe for a catastrophe. It's basically a platform created by a mad scientist who has tried to assemble all of the unintelligent ideas possible and put them on a Democratic debate stage. And so I think this has turned off a large number of American people, and justifiably so, and that's enabled Mayor Pete, for instance, who's essentially an unknown, who has essentially done little more then operate as a safety crossing guard for a public school. He is now receiving millions of dollars from billionaires who think he's a viable presidential candidate. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and this whole thing, we're laughing. It's been a disastrous time, and the Democrats have to get things back on track starting tomorrow. Because listen to this exchange between Bernie Sanders, so defensive, and this is a guy who's basically the front runner and looking pretty good for a socialist communist in 2020 when the economy is doing this as good as it is. And Margaret Brennan on CBS Face the Nation to Bernie Sanders. Listen to this exchange, bite one.
You're advocating for the empowerment of the U.S. government to take over the entire health care system. This just optically looks like the party can't run its own caucus.
Margaret, that's not a true statement. I'm not advocating for the United States government to take over the health care system. What I am advocating for is an expansion of Medicare. Medicare exists.
Right.
I want to expand it over a four-year period.
Which would be administered by the U.S. government.
So he's even hedging on Medicare for All now, which is bizarre because he's the socialist. And, you know, I think it's just if they don't get back on track starting tomorrow,
you think it's that quick?
This is this goofy of an election. I mean, and you know what? They are up against a very tough opponent, an opponent who's going to roll into New Hampshire tonight, have more people at his rally than any of them have had probably in all their rallies combined. He's going to rip each one of their heads off, which will make people question whether or not they should show up and vote for any of them tomorrow. Seriously. That's what he's doing. I mean, he's got to...
But this
President Trump has the right to do that. He's on the ballot, too, tomorrow. He's got to get people out to vote but in New Hampshire, too.
I want to ask Harry and Andy this. But they've made a conscious decision, I mean, the Democratic Party has, to go with this lineup of candidates. This is who they promoted. This is who's coming through the system.
I think that is true. And with respect to, for instance, Bernie Sanders, he had a fair amount of support among Democrats, even though he's a socialist, from his 2016 campaign. And his support among Democrats has actually risen since he's had a heart attack. But most Americans will have difficulty accepting Bernie Sanders' policies. So, for instance, with Medicare for All, putting aside the problems with having the federal government administer the entire healthcare system, which he denies, it's important to note that when he talks about Canada as a model, the Canadian government does not cover all health care expenses. Canada, for instance, in Canada, it takes you 5 months to get an MRI appointment. And so what do many Canadians wind up doing? Because you have to actually apply and get permission from a doctor to be a patient. Many Canadians, guess what? They wind up in emergency rooms.
Let me take the final call of the day to answer this for Denise in South Carolina, line two. Denise, quickly, you're on the air.
Hi, Jordan. First, I want to thank you for everything you do for this country. I've been hearing from some people that Republicans can vote in the Democratic caucus in South Carolina.
Okay, so, yeah, let me just answer quickly because you're in South Carolina. You have a primary. It's coming up. It's after Nevada. It's an open primary. So it doesn't matter what party you're registered with. On that primary date, you can decide. Now, you can only vote in one. But you can decide. This has always been interesting in South Carolina. It's why it's favored the Joe Biden types, why it's favored the more modest, because Republicans and independents can say, you know what, I'm probably a Trump voter, but just in case, I'd rather the Democrats have a moderate choice on the ballot. So since Donald Trump has not got any real opposition, I'll cross over and vote in the Democrat primary. That's why it's favored the more, quote-unquote, moderate candidate. That it's different in every state. South Carolina happens to be what's called an open primary, so you're right there.
All right, that does it for the broadcast today. Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.